He passed it to her and she took it. The whiskey bit at the back of her throat but warmed her chest. They hit a pothole and the load in the flatbed bounced and thudded with a sickening sound. She took another sip and passed it back to Loyal. The truck veered left and her body leaned into the curve of what she guessed was the highway. They were quiet now, driving straight and fast. She wondered what her uncle was thinking, if he'd done this kind of thing before. Moved bodies wrapped in tarps in the middle of the night. Whoever it was inside that tarp was so big they'd had to bend his legs and angle his body to fit him between the toolbox bolted to the truck's cab and the tailgate. Loyal threw the cigarette out the window and lit another one.
I saw her in the window. It's bad she was there, he said. Complicates everything.
Jamie felt an unexpected need to defend her mother and took another drink. He stared straight out the windshield as if racing toward a house fire. She won't talk, you know. The whiskey slowed her tongue and slurred her words. She won't say anything that might get her in trouble. Talking helped. Helped keep the image of the tarp and the body wrapped inside it from taking complete possession of her brain. What's it matter? She asked, just to keep the conversation going.
The more people know about a problem like this, the more likely something gets out.
Huh, she said, considering the numbers. That the problem had a mathematical equation reassured her, though anyone could see that four people were three too many. He took another sip.
You see her much?
No. Some. Now and then. Toby's crazy for her.
Uh-huh,
he said. They passed a lighted billboard and the inside of the cab flashed bright green. He held the cigarette and the wheel with one hand, capped the flask with the other.
Boys love their mothers no matter what.
Flashes of light swiped the interior of the cab as they passed another billboard, and then a third, and she realized they were headed toward Mimawa. She expected to feel the truck lift as it climbed the ramp to the freeway, but was surprised by the echo of a roar. The engine inside a tunnel. He'd taken the underpass. What are we going to do with him?
A ditch or a gully. Can't dig until after the first thaw.
She tried to guess where, but there were abandoned farms and hunting reserves all over the county. The underpass told her they were moving north, but she hadn't been out this way in years, not since they'd gone hunting that one time. Maybe she was safer not knowing. He let the truck slow to a crawl, then turned left onto an unpaved road that dropped off sharply, weeds slapping at the fenders. He stopped once and backed the truck up at an angle and stopped again, looked out each window, switched off the engine, told her to get out. When he cut the lights, the woods fell black all around them, trees looming on every side high enough to block the sky. A gully dropped off at her feet. Beyond that, the sharp line of a tin roof caught a fraction of moonlight. Some old barn. They slid the tarp out of the truck bed and it landed hard on the frozen ground. Something cracked within the bundle and the sound was nauseating. Jamie thought about another sip of whiskey, but leaned against the truck instead, while Loyal grabbed the edge of the tarp in his big fists and pulled.
We'll leave him down there, he said, nodding toward the ravine.
But the ground was dirt and rock, and they could barely budge him. Jamie grabbed one corner of the tarp, and together they moved him about an inch before she landed on her ass, the tarp damp with the night air and slipping out of her hands.
Let's roll him,
Loyal said, his breath jagged with exertion. Jamie got on her knees for leverage, and together they rolled the tarp to the edge of the embankment, where the ground sloped away and gravity kicked in. The bundle slid at first, then tumbled and gained momentum with a series of nauseating thuds. The corner of the tarp snagged on a branch of a fallen tree limb and tore loose, unwinding. But the body kept falling, gaining speed and rolling freely to the bottom of the ditch, a shoe flying off, a hand waving absurdly, then stopping where the ground leveled out. It came to an awkward rest, face up, the legs twisted, one arm bent all wrong. The mouth open and slack-jawed, and the face unbelievably pale, with blank eyes staring at the star-filled night. Jamie had seen that dead man stare once before, and the memory of her father's corpse filled her brain before she could stop it. Loyal switched on his flashlight and scanned the beam down the ravine.
Jesus, he said. He still has his watch on.
She sat at the top of the ditch, staring at the man's vaguely familiar face, his blood-soaked shirt, the grotesque and distorted posture. Who is that? She'd never seen a man so big, and from that alone knew he wasn't from Blind River. Loyal skidded halfway down the graveled embankment, grabbed the tarp, and slid the rest of the way to the body.
No one you know.
He searched the man's jacket and trousers, fished out a wallet and a set of keys.
Damn, Keating. Didn't even go through his pockets.
Jamie sat on the ridge, unable to look away. That stare? Did they all look like that?
What?
Loyal looked up at Jamie. He threw the tarp over the man's face and started tucking it underneath his body.
No. Get down here and start bringing me rocks.
She was relieved that he'd covered the man's face, but the tarp was still in the shape of a corpse. Or a mummy. She tried not to dwell on it, grateful that her uncle seemed to know what to do next, and for the simple chore of finding stones and small boulders and carrying them to him so that he could begin to build a fortress, a wall of sorts, something that would stand between them and this unholy thing they were doing. She thought about the dams beavers built, and how this was similar, but not really, because there was no purpose in this dam, no water in this ditch. Just an embankment left over from what she guessed used to be a working farm. And how ridiculous her thoughts were, considering there was a dead man lying at her feet. Loyal placed the stones around the tarp, then on top of the tarp, building a pile. And she worried briefly that the rocks would settle and drop and crush the body, guts and all. She gathered rocks for what seemed an hour, ignoring the dirt gathering beneath her fingernails, the split nail that tore deeper as she dug another rock from its place in the frozen ground, the sting from another, and then another, until all her fingers bled. She accepted the pain, the split fingernails, and the cold, cracked cuticles, because this little bit of blood made the thing they were doing seem almost sacred. They dragged brush from the woods and threw it over the pile, and eventually it began to look less like a burial mound and more like a landslide. She imagined setting it on fire. It only seemed fitting. But overhead, the black night began lifting to purple. And her uncle, tossing the last of the brush on the pile, rubbed his hands against his trousers and told her to go start the engine. A fire would attract attention and lead authorities to the body, identifiable in so many ways. Jamie climbed up out of the ditch, sick at what she'd taken part in, but relieved to be done and to be finally going home. In the truck, she shivered and sipped some whiskey, certain that one day she'd need to find her way back here. It seemed they weren't that far out of town, but she never came out this way. They bounced over the uneven ground back toward the road. The whiskey sloshed in her belly and threatened to come back up. She gripped the armrest and swallowed hard. At the road, he told her to get back down on the floorboard. She folded her body in half and hunkered there, rubbing her hands, impatient for the engine to warm. Her tailbone smacked against the floorboard each time they hit a pothole. She sucked at her fingernails, the sting worsening as they warmed, and wished for the cold again. Even though she knew Loyal wouldn't say, she asked, "You gonna tell me where we were just now?" He lit a cigarette.
"Private property. And that's the last time you ask. Some things you're better off not knowing."
She saw the logic there, but made note of the light she'd seen on the drive, the sudden drop of the pavement, the moonlight on the tin roof in the distance. There'd come a time, she felt sure, she'd need to remember all this and more. He offered her the flask again, but the heater was blasting in her face and she waved it away. The truck slowed and then climbed a small rise. Now they were back on the highway, and the road smoothed out. In the sallow light of the cab, the stubble on Loyal's face seemed wolfish, his eyes eerie with the backlight from the dashboard. They passed the casino billboards again, the green neon blinking on the windshield. The wheels whined against the highway, the heater blasted. South. She could tell that much. She rested her head on the seat cushion and almost passed out, but wouldn't give herself the relief. Not yet. We square now? She asked, lifting her head.
No, not square.
He set the flask between his knees and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
But if you want, I'll give you a route and double your pay.
She closed her eyes and tried to count backward from 100 to empty her mind.
You listening?
I'm listening, she said, but the words left her mouth like oblong echoes.
Tomorrow you make the rounds. Collect the money from the cash boxes and take it to Jack's. Same as always.
Jack. She hadn't thought of him all night.
I'll leave you a list and a set of keys for the machines, and you can keep using this truck. I'll buy the gas. Make sure it gets clean, though, first thing in the morning. You got that?
His voice was hollow and distant. Okay. She closed her eyes and had the sensation of standing on the edge of a cliff, of something vast and dark, spreading like a shadow beneath her feet.
You help me, I help you. But make no mistake, one word gets out about tonight and all deals are off.
Sweat dripped down her back. The whiskey had turned her brain to lead. Darkness crept up the back of her skull and she saw that man's face again. She opened her eyes and shook it off.
There's one more thing you should know. Things change. Maybe I disappear. You got something on Keating. Keep that in your back pocket.
But I don't know where we were.
If need be, I'll tell you what you need to know.
The truck turned abruptly, its wheels crunching over gravel, and they stopped in front of the trailer. Loyal turned off the engine and opened his door, told her to go get some sleep. The cold air was a relief. She stumbled out of the truck, stared dully at the gray haze of dawn rising in the field behind the house, and went inside. On his cot, Toby opened his eyes at her for a moment, then turned toward the wall. A draft lifted the curtains at the window as she burrowed beneath her blankets, fighting the image of that dead man's face, forcing herself to think instead of the many stones she'd carried. Chapter 14. The next morning, Toby stood next to Jamie's cot and watched her sleep. He said good morning 3 times in an increasingly louder voice and poked her in the cheek when she didn't respond. After an eternity of winter gloom, the sun had finally come out, busting through the window and slanting across her eyes. But that didn't wake her either. When she groaned and rolled toward the wall, he pulled on his boots and jacket, stuck the box with the necklace in it deep in the front pocket of his jeans, and left for town. It was already late for first period, but it was just study hall, and who cared anyway? It was his mom's first birthday since she'd come home, and he had a present for her. If he walked fast, he could get to the diner in 20 minutes. She worked the breakfast shift every morning, and unless she'd taken it off for her birthday, she'd pour him a cup of coffee like he was one of her regulars, and he'd drink it while she shuffled plates of scrambled eggs and toast to her customers. He'd wait for things to get quiet, even if that meant missing his morning classes, and surprise her with the necklace. The scene played out in his head, her surprise, the happy tears in her eyes. He passed on his usual breakfast of 2 Snickers and a Monster from the 7-Eleven and cut straight through the woods to Main Street. Most of the storefronts on Main, the hardware store, the Army Recruitment Center, the pawn shop, the insurance broker, the bank, were still closed, but Mr. Lou's dry cleaning and the diner were open. The bells on the diner's front door jangled when he stepped inside. Phoebe looked up from pouring Max coffee and, seeing her face, Toby felt a pang of regret as he realized he'd forgotten to buy a birthday card. A sergeant from the recruiting center came in right behind him, and it was him that Phoebe attended to first by motioning to an open table by the window and handing him a menu. Customers always came first. He knew that, Besides, his favorite stool at the end of the counter by the kitchen door was vacant. Even before he sat down, she turned over a cup and filled it for him, said, "Morning," then went to take the sergeant's order. Her eyes and nose were red and puffy, and he wondered if she'd been sad to wake up alone, her first birthday after 8 behind bars, and was glad he'd planned it this way. Women were healed in mysterious ways by presents of jewelry from the men in their lives. Despite having never done it himself, he'd seen this fact proven 1,000 times on television. He'd never had the chance to create that kind of smile on a woman's face before today. But she was here now, and he was here, and he'd planned the whole thing himself. He set the black box on the counter, leaned forward on his elbows, and kept it hidden under his hand. At the right moment, he'd reveal the box and watch the surprise spread across her face. While she took a to-go order over the phone, he tore open 3 packages of sugar and filled his coffee with cream. She stuck the order through the cook's window, and the cook, a guy named Tommy, snagged it, and then Toby's mom came back to him. "I got here late, and I can't talk much this morning," she said, leaning over the counter, her words rushed and low. She set a pamphlet next to his coffee. "This is for you. The recruitment officer comes in here every day. He said you can apply before your 18th birthday if you have a parent sign." She wasn't her usual self, but that's what he'd come here to fix. He pushed the box toward her. She hadn't noticed it, and said, "Happy birthday, Mom." She stared flatly at the box, and Toby realized she didn't understand. She'd gone without for too many years. "It's for your birthday. Open it." He flinched when she seemed to recoil, to step away from the box and straighten her back. "What is that?" She wiped her hands on her apron and glanced sideways down the counter. He slid the box toward her. She didn't take it, so he opened it for her. "Happy birthday," he said again, more as an explanation than anything. She frowned. "How did you afford that?" Phoebe was still talking in that low rush, but people were noticing now. Mac peered down the counter. The necklace was too simple. He should have known she'd want something nicer, bigger, better. A tiny silver cross on a thin chain. How could he be so stupid? Mac turned back to his newspaper. "Let me put it on you," Toby said, but Phoebe snagged the box and shoved it in her apron pocket. "I'll put it on later. Let me get you something to eat." His face reflected hers now, and his mood went tumbling toward that empty feeling he couldn't name but hated anyway. He saw a string hanging around her neck. A string, when she could have worn this necklace. "I'm not really hungry," he said, knowing that empty feeling would be with him the rest of the day. Tommy slammed the cook's bell and called, "Order up!" Phoebe went to the pass-through and grabbed the steaming plates. Toby's eyes felt hot as he sat there at the counter, trying to recover. The pamphlet showed a picture of a soldier driving a tank across the desert. He knew what happened to those guys. They came home as heroes, smiling in their uniforms and prosthetics, like they were still whole men. But what did the uniform matter when they'd been blown up by cowards who dressed like women and hid behind children? And how could she want him to leave, especially after she'd just come back? She returned to refill his coffee cup, but it was still full. "Don't you need to get to school? You don't like it?" "I like it, honey." She reached over and touched the back of his hand. "I just don't want to get it dirty while I work. I'll put it on later, okay? After I get home." She unfolded the pamphlet and spread it on the counter. "John, over by the window, gave me this. He said for you to come talk to him at the recruitment center." Inside, there were more pictures of soldiers, men and women, a guy walking through a crowd of dancing kids. "Have you thought about what you'll do after graduation?" she asked. "I'm working with Loyal." "Loyal? That's not a career. You should join the army and learn a real trade. And get blown up? Shh, Toby." She glanced toward the window. "You could have a life. Get out of Blind River for a few years, come back, and build your own family." "I don't want a family." How could she say this to him? She wanted him to leave? All those years spent waiting for her to come home. All those years wondering what she could possibly have done that they'd taken her away from him, her child, and locked her away. He'd cried so hard that first year, believing that she'd be home soon, not understanding, not accepting, just waiting and waiting for her to come back before finally getting it, getting that she wasn't ever coming home. And when he grew tired of crying, he'd started hitting things, then people. Hitting Jamie, hitting kids at school, hitting anything he wanted, whether it meant a broken knuckle or not. Hitting was better than crying, he knew that much. But he wouldn't hit his mother, even though right now it seemed like she deserved it. Instead, he picked up the brochure, ripped it in half, and walked out the door. He walked down Main, cussing and rubbing the corners of his eyes, his nose that had started to drip. Snow crunched beneath his boots. He cut across the soccer field with its frozen brown grass, bent and dead from the winter. She'd been gone most of his life, and he'd been fine without her. Bitch. Most mothers took care of their kids. Most mothers didn't steal shit and go to prison. He pushed open the school door and instantly wondered why he'd come. But he knew why. Inside these walls were people, and what he needed right now was someone to hit. He stopped and turned to leave, but the second period bell sounded and the halls filled with kids. So he put his head down and pulled his collar up around his chin and tried to cruise past the front office. Ms. Hollins and Coach Palmer stepped out of their weekly staff meeting just as he, fists clenched in his pockets, rounded the corner.
"Hold up there, elders,"
Palmer said and put his hand on Toby's shoulder.
"School started an hour ago."
Toby flinched and pushed the man's hand away.
"Keep your hands off, faggot."
"Whoa, in my office now, Toby,"
Ms. Hollins said, pointing in Toby's face.
"You need to cool down."
"No,"
Toby yelled. He didn't want to be here, not for one minute. He hated this place, hated these people. He turned back toward the doors, but Coach grabbed his arm. Toby wheeled on him, came around swinging his fist at no one, at anyone, at everyone, at nothing and everything, at the first thing stupid enough to stand still and let him connect. Chapter 15. When she finally opened her eyes, Jamie could tell it was way past noon. Slatted light cut through the plastic blinds, casting broken shadows on the wall. She sat up, groggy from the boozy sleep, and opened the blinds. Out back, sunlight glinted off the snow all the way to the ridge. Above that, the sky was a blinding bluish white. Her fingernails were cracked and split and caked with dirt, and she remembered everything that had happened the night before. That man, his big head and lifeless eyes, the big bloody hole in his stomach. God, she'd helped dispose of a dead man. That made her a felon, except she was just an accomplice, and she'd sort of been forced into it. But she wasn't a minor anymore. Even with her eyes open, she saw the image of his slack face, the distorted angle of his neck. She'd stared too long before Loyal scrambled down the embankment and thrown the tarp over him. She hated horror films and zombie faces. That shit was fucked. The only people who could laugh at it were people who'd never seen a corpse. She started counting backward from 10 before that image had a chance to set in, and went to the bathroom to look for peroxide and ointment. A man that age. He probably had kids, a wife. She chewed a thumbnail off and spit it out. How many rocks had she dug up and carried to cover him? Maybe 1,000. This is how it starts. A life of crime. Except that it had started months ago. Making cash runs for Loyal. Small-time stuff, things that a public defender could get dismissed as a first offense. She weighed her age against her uncle's and the judge's and figured a court would take that into consideration. But that was stupid. Keating was a judge. Nothing weighed against that. The trailer was quiet, and she knew Toby and Loyal were gone. She turned the TV on and ran the faucet in the kitchen, hoping for hot water. The keys to the old truck and a ledger were on the table, along with a note saying that Loyal had hosed off the flatbed. Good. She studied the list. Addresses and four-digit codes that would give her access to the machines in 8 locations on the west side of town. 10 up north, and 13 on the east side. Almost the whole operation, but she had days to get it all. She could do this. If it moved her closer to getting out of here, she could get it done. She thought through a few calculations, figured that between the extra work and the tournament, she'd break even by summer. Steam billowed over the sink. Loyal had finally fixed the hot water heater. On the television, the weatherman pointed at a map and predicted another cold front of freezing temperatures and snow. She stepped into the hot shower, let the water beat down on her. She scrubbed her nails, peeled off a couple of broken ones, scrubbed them again, thought about that man, tried to remember what the Bible said about the sins of the fathers being visited on the children. She couldn't recall it exactly, but the notion was like this mess with Loyal and Keating. Their rivalries and alliances went back decades, without any logic that she could decipher. Small-town bullshit. She'd been born into it and knew exactly how her life would play out if she stayed. 2 or 3 kids, a divorce or two, a dead-end job that would keep her half-starved if she didn't eat junk food and get fat, get diabetes and lose her feet, or die of a heart attack. She saw it all around her. Donuts and caffeine for the early morning despair. Booze after work just to take the edge off a 12-hour grind. She thought about her mother, standing behind the curtain in the window at Keating's house. The woman had never had a chance in this town. No elders did. Not really. If there was a window to escape, it was closing fast. Right here at the underside of 20, there was an opening. Maybe a month. And it might be the only time she'd be able to leave. Find her way to some city where there were real jobs, where winters weren't so fucking cold, where no one would ask her to help move a dead body in the middle of the night. Somewhere she'd have half a shot before she got in too deep and this town pulled her under, like it was doing right now. The shower turned lukewarm and she turned it off and wrapped herself in a towel. Outside, a car's wheels crunched over the gravel in the driveway, its engine idling. Someone was probably looking for her uncle, and she hoped whoever it was would see the Dodge wasn't here and move on. But the engine went quiet, and seconds later, someone was banging on the front door. She grabbed a robe and peeked around the corner through the small window on the door and came face to face with Keating, peering through the glass.
"Loyal home?"
he yelled through the door. His gray hair was smooth and slicked back.
"Saw his truck."
Keating thumbed over his shoulder at the Ford sitting on the street. "He doesn't drive that anymore. Bought a new one." Jamie thought for a minute that was all the information the man would need to leave. But the knob turned and the door opened and she cussed Toby because he could never be trusted to lock a door. Keating pushed through and she stepped sideways, knocking into the table by the couch.
"We need to talk," he said.
"Like I said, he's not here." She knotted the sash around her waist and tugged the towel tighter around her neck.
"He should have left me a package. Do you have it?"
He cut his eyes around the room, at the broom leaning against the kitchen table, the dishes stacked in the sink, the muddied floor, and openly cringed. Then he asked,
"Where'd you take him?"
"Take who?" She ignored the question about the package, knowing he'd let it drop rather than bring up Loyal's business. He stared at her flatly.
"Don't play stupid with me. That man, where'd you take him?"
She shook her head. "I don't know. Loyal made me ride on the floorboard. Besides, she was supposed to play dumb about last night." Keating picked up a piece of mail off the kitchen table, read the address, and tossed it back.
"So you really don't know?"
She thought he said this with some relief, so she added, "I only helped pull him off the truck. I don't even know who it was." It came out so calmly that it sounded absurd. Her feet. She hadn't had time to towel them off, were freezing.
"Do you understand how important it is to keep quiet?"
"Seems obvious."
"Don't get smart."
Keating pulled a kitchen chair away from the table and wiped the seat with the palm of his hand. Up close, and in the bland light, he seemed older than her uncle. His hair was whiter, and there was something stiff and wary about the way he moved his body, as though he thought the trailer might collapse on him. She didn't sit, hoping he wouldn't either, but he did.
"That woman," he said, leaning forward on his elbows. "Your mother, I mean, was invited into my home. My home, a judge's home."
Jamie tried to follow, but last night's whiskey was making it hard to keep up. He snapped his fingers.
"Are you listening, young lady?"
She moved her eyes to meet his, felt her shoulders hunch up around her neck. It was starting to sink in. They would be linked forever by this. She and this man.
"I knew her history. I knew she was an ex-con. But I looked beyond that and extended hospitality. What happened was an accident. But if word gets out, the authorities won't be kind. Her parole will be revoked. And that's just the beginning. I'm willing to go along with this for her sake, for the sake of her children. But if anything comes to light..."
He lifted his palms.
"A woman like that. Well, a lot of assumptions will be made. It could be bad for everyone involved. For her family. Her kids."
She slapped at the water dripping down the backs of her legs because it made her think of spiders, and right now she needed to concentrate.
"There's no weapon, I assure you that's been taken care of. It was the least I could do."
Weapon? She hadn't thought of a weapon. But what did she think? That someone could rip a hole in a man with their bare hands?
"Could be seen as a crime of passion, I suppose. But who knows, really, why some people turn out the way they do."
He looked her up and down. She hated that. He was big enough to take her if he wanted. She backed closer to the hall and pulled the towel tighter around her neck. He'd been with Phoebe in a way that made Jamie ill to think about. But she doubted that screwing a lover's daughter would matter to a man like him. "I don't know what happened before I got there," she said, to remind him what he'd come here for. "I just did what my uncle told me to." He stopped staring at her legs and bobbed his head almost imperceptibly.
"But she had the gall to steal something from me. I want what's mine. Get it back. And tell her to keep quiet. If she's quiet long enough, this thing will blow over."
"What did she take?" He sighed impatiently.
"Do I have to explain everything? No. No, I don't. This is all her fault. She'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Get it from her and bring it to me."
"But I don't, I mean, I never see her." He slammed his fist on the table and Jamie jumped.
"Go, damn it, go see her."
He took out a silver money clip from his pocket and peeled off some 20s.
"This is for you. Girls like you always need a little extra money."
She just stared at the money he set on the table. What good would $100 do her if she had to deal with this lunatic? He stood up.
"There's more if you keep your mouth shut. And believe me, darling, you want to keep your mouth shut. You don't want anyone knowing you are an accomplice to anything."
He started to say more, but just shook his head and waved his hand in her face. He walked out the front door and Jamie locked it behind him. Water dripped from her hair as the wheels crunched on the driveway and the noise of the Cadillac's engine faded down the street. Accomplice. There it was, hanging over her head. Darling. Like he had the right to call her that. Chapter 16. One word swirled through Jamie's brain. Accomplice. As she drove to the first stop on the route, the word kept repeating itself, like a living, breathing thing spinning inside her head. Accomplice. She turned up the country station, wishing for the first time in her life that she smoked. Surely smoking helped stop obsessive brain chatter. Crowley's Pub was Loyal's most lucrative spot. She parked the truck out front, let the pub door close behind her, and waited for her eyes to adjust to the dark. The air inside was dank. The floor and baseboards were caked with grime as thick as chewing gum. Garbage cans overflowed with plastic plates and cups. The place smelled of humanity. Stale smoke, vats of cold grease, old beer, and beneath that cheap perfume, aftershave, and backed-up toilets. The dance floor was mirrored and jammed tight with human-sized speakers and a low-hanging disco ball. Crowley's pub was just as much a part of the bedrock of Blind River as the Methodist church, but far more profitable and always more crowded. The back door had been propped open, so she stepped around a few high-top tables and walked toward it. Out back, a guy in a torn black t-shirt with a cigarette clamped between his lips was hosing down kitchen mats. He glanced up when she said hey and apparently found her uninteresting, or at least unthreatening.
Not open till 5, he said.
Here to check the machines, she said, dangling the keys where he could see them.
You work for Loyal?
He looked more closely at her face.
Oh yeah, I've seen you before. You got keys for them? Fine.
He went back to dousing the mats. Jamie and Toby had waited in this bar's parking lot twice a week for the last 8 years while Loyal went inside and collected money from the machines. Two legal pinball games sat near the entrance, but the coin pusher and the slot machine were tucked in a corner in the back where gamblers would sniff them out. She wrestled the coin pusher away from the wall and squeezed in behind it, wishing she'd brought a flashlight. The lock was at chest level and impossible to see in the dark. She felt her way along, and it felt like magic when the key fitted in the hole and clicked open. She bagged what she guessed was 20 pounds of quarters and put them in her backpack. The teaser bills had moved too close to the front, so she repositioned those at the back of the machine and wondered just how many drunks had contributed to the proceeds. She locked up the unit and shoved it back against the wall, swearing because the thing weighed twice as much as she did. The glass and chrome were filthy from spilled drinks and fingerprints, so she wiped them until they shined. Shiny things attracted more money, and come 5 o'clock tonight, the machine would begin filling up again. 5 years ago, Loyal had had the bright idea to slap nonprofit labels on the units, some with children in wheelchairs, some with underfed kittens in cages, or busted-up veterans holding American flags. People believing they were contributing to a worthy cause usually saw nothing wrong with the possibility of scoring a little cash in the process. Cops saw the images and decided to look away at what might not be legal but would definitely involve a load of paperwork. The slot machine was in a corner between a cigarette machine and the wall, and impossible to move. She squatted down to reach the knee-high lockbox mounted underneath and cringed when she had to touch the floor with her hands. From now on, she'd carry sanitary wipes in her backpack. The lock cooperated on the first try. She slid the tray out and set it on the floor. The front door opened, and Jamie looked around the legs of a pinball machine to see a narrow figure standing in a rectangle of light, like a Hollywood alien exiting a spaceship. Her first instinct was to hide the cash, but the silhouette was as slight as a girl, so Jamie relaxed.
Anyone here?
It was definitely a girl's voice. Jamie started to say something, but didn't want to explain why she was sitting on the floor under a slot machine, so she stayed put and hoped the guy out back would handle it. He did, slipping inside the back door and explaining they didn't open till 5.
Okay, but I'm from out of town and I'm meeting my dad here. TJ Bangor? Have you seen him?
The tight end? That's your dad?
The name sounded familiar. Jamie remembered it from Toby and Loyal's mutual NFL obsession. Watching football together was about the only thing the two did without fighting.
He's retired, but yeah, he's my dad.
No, I'd remember if I'd seen him.
Can I wait in here? He's not answering his cell.
She waved her cell phone as if to prove her point. He glanced at his watch and said,
The boss doesn't let anyone hang out till we open. There's a diner on Main.
From the dark corner, Jamie saw the girl shaking her head.
Jeez. Is it okay if I wait in the parking lot?
If you want.
The girl left and the guy closed the front door. Jamie heard the deadbolt slide into place, heard the guy's rubber boots coming toward her, squishing on the grimy floor. He slapped the slot machine as he walked past her.
Leave out the back door, will you? I've got to keep it locked up front.
Jamie bagged the cash from the machine, a wad of bills as thick as her wrist. She'd have to be more careful with people walking in. One meth head wandering in could cost her plenty. She zipped up her backpack, got up, and wiped her hands on her jeans. When she got outside to the truck, Jamie heaved her backpack into the passenger seat. The girl sat in a little black Mercedes, two spots away, talking on her phone. Flashy sunglasses covered half her face, but Jamie could tell from the highlights in her short cropped hair and her plump lips that she was pretty. She backed the truck out and rolled slowly forward, wondering what it felt like to grow up with a guy like that as a dad. NFL money. Rich little girl. Big money. A big man gone missing. A big man in that tarp. People starting to look around and ask questions. Things were adding up in a way that made her want to run. She rolled past that little black Mercedes and gunned it onto the highway. By 6 o'clock, Jamie had collected the cash out of 7 of the 8 gaming units on the North Route. There'd been a slot machine snugged in beside an ice machine in the back of a liquor store, and another one next to a money changer in a convenience store. Most of them were pretty well hidden, but Grizzly's Beer Hub out on the highway had a draw poker unit sitting right on top of the bar that had taken in over 3,000 in 20s alone. Driving back to town, she estimated there was enough cash in her backpack for a decent start on the professional poker circuit and wondered what the going rate was for helping to dispose of a body and if she couldn't leverage that somehow. It was fun to think about that for all of 2 seconds, but her cheek was still tender from the back of Loyal's hand. At least he hadn't broken her nose. Her last stop was Mr. Lou's dry cleaning. Loyal paid a 10% rake to Mr. Lou, so he often disappeared to the back when a customer came in for their clothes. Eventually, the customer would get bored and wander over to the coin pusher, eye its piles of coins and the perpetual $20 bill jutting out toward the front, and play however many quarters were in their pocket. Mr. Lou would listen from the back of the store and wait for the silence that indicated the customer had run out of coins, then appear with their order. Jamie unlocked the back of the collection box as Mr. Lou came to the front. "Hello," she said. "I'm Loyal's niece." She turned toward him and raised her hand so he could see them.
"I know who you are," he said.
Of course he did. She was the elder's girl. The whole town knew her, had known her for years. When they'd been little, she and Toby would wait in the truck drinking cherry Cokes while Loyal went inside and took care of business. When they got older, they would sometimes carry the toolbox he kept for repairs and beg snacks from the proprietors. Sometimes Loyal would try to show Toby how to change out a fuse or a light bulb, but it was Jamie who paid attention.
"Oh, okay," she said, feeling stupid. "I work for him."
"If you got a key, it's okay."
"I got them."
She unlocked the box in the back and poured the quarters into a plastic grocery bag. She repositioned the 20 behind the pile of quarters and locked up the machine.
"See you next time," she said,
but Mr. Lou had already gone to the back. She parked on Main, locked the truck, and walked half a block to the diner. Sunlight bent at the horizon and threw such a light against the brick and clapboard buildings that Jamie had to stop for a moment and stare at her hometown. Moments like that made her wonder if she'd miss this place if she ever got out. But she figured sunsets were pretty everywhere and waited for the moment to pass. The smell of supper was in the air, and the street in front of the diner was lined with cars and pickups, including a small brown sedan parked right up front that she was sure she'd seen before. Inside, Phoebe was behind the counter, serving plates of meatloaf and country fried steak to the regular dinner crowd. Jamie started toward the counter, but halted when her mother looked up and widened her eyes. Jamie scanned the room and saw him right off. Brown suit, polished shoes, loose tie. Everything about him said cop. And now that she thought about it, she connected that car to the cop. When he turned to see what Phoebe was looking at, Jamie suspected this was the man she'd seen outside the trailer the other night. He sat at the counter, and the only open stool was the one to his right. She backed up toward the door, but the cop called over.
"Hey,"
he said, motioning to the stool beside him.
"There's a seat right here."
Jamie set her backpack on the floor beside the stool and sat down, knowing that any other move would have made her stand out. Phoebe brought Jamie a Coke.
I got a spare BLT with your name on it, the guy said. I was just reminiscing with your mom about the other night. She tell you about it?
Do I know you? Jamie asked.
You're Loyal's kid, right?
He's my uncle, Phoebe said. She's my kid, and got busy ringing up checks at the cash register.
Right, he said. I knew that. I'm Garcia, Detective Garcia.
Jamie unwrapped a straw, noted the fake friendliness. All the locals knew the elders had a history with the law.
She tell you about the game the other night?
It was just like a cop to poke around with questions, and she didn't like it. Didn't like that she'd been the one to cause her mother to end up at Keating's. Jamie worried what the game might have to do with that man's body. A weird paralysis chilled her spine between her shoulder blades as Garcia rattled on.
The game at Keating's. You know TJ Bangor was there? You know who he is, right?
He didn't wait for an answer.
Biggest hand of the night. Bangor uses his Super Bowl ring to cover a bet. Loses to Keating big time. A full house over an ace high straight. You should have seen it.
Huh, Jamie said. Who's TJ Banker? She'd tried all afternoon to put this thing out of her mind. She sipped the Coke, watched her mother. Phoebe was at the other end of the counter, but obviously listening to everything Garcia said.
Who is he? One of the greatest tight ends in NFL history.
Phoebe worked her way down the counter, refilling coffee cups. When she got near them, Garcia said loudly,
Thing is, he wants it back. Ask me to help him.
Sounds like you need to talk with Judge Keating about that, Jamie snapped. She felt a little odd speaking up for her mother, and knew her tone was no way to shut down a cop. Garcia gave her a glance that could have been a warning.
As a matter of fact, I saw the judge downtown this morning and did just that. Told me he never saw the thing after that night. Said it was a joke gone bad, and he meant to give it back, but when he looked for it, he couldn't find it. He thinks the house cleaner might have thrown it out the next morning. Seems awful something so expensive would just disappear, don't you think?
The French fries smelled like old fish sticks and the Coke was flat. Jamie chewed a piece of bacon from her sandwich and felt her stomach tighten. There was no way to know if Garcia had really talked to Keating, but she couldn't see why he would have mentioned it to her when he showed up at the trailer. She wanted to check her mother's reaction, but Garcia was watching them both too closely. She dipped a French fry in ketchup and fought the feeling that the entire dinner crowd was listening in.
Rings are small. They go missing all the time.
She forced herself to chew and swallow and watch as a red splotch appeared on her mother's neck.
Not a ring like that. Big as a golf ball.
Her mouth had gone dry.
Did he check his garbage can?
Trucks ran this morning.
Huh. There's your trouble.
She sucked at her soda.
Anyway,
he said, pulling a 20 out of his wallet.
There's a reward for it if it turns up.
He watched Phoebe's face as he said it, but she just stared back and cocked her head toward the kitchen.
Hey, Tommy, any big diamond rings in the lost and found box?
The cook stuck his head through the pass-through.
Yeah, a whole box full, in fact. I'm heading to Miami on a private jet when I get done frying this chicken.
Garcia laughed, but it was fake. Phoebe wiped her hands on her apron and rang up his bill. Jamie watched her mother as she made change from the register. Cool hands and calm fingers, the growing splotch on her neck the only sign of distress. Phoebe set his change on the counter.
Maybe he shouldn't have bet it in the first place.
No, he shouldn't have. But there's a big difference between losing and getting set up.
Garcia took his time putting his money in his wallet, holding Phoebe's gaze the whole time. After a moment, she said,
Drunks bet stupid and lose big.
Yep. But he's a hero in these parts. Or you've been up the river so long you don't know that.
It was a low blow and Jamie cringed. Phoebe didn't even blink. But she looked fragile, the bones of her knuckles going white as her fingers curled into fists. The flush on her neck crept up to her face. There was no way Garcia could miss it. A hush went through the diner. It was her imagination, Jamie told herself. It was just her imagination. But it was the same horrible silence she'd experienced the first day of every school year, when the other kids pointed at her and whispered to each other. That's the girl whose mom's in prison. There was a slow widening in her brain. She had let herself believe those moments were behind her. But now she saw that those days would never be completely gone. Not when a cop, one of the good guys, was throwing it in their faces again. It made her ill. She had to get out of there. The talk with her mother would have to wait. She picked up her backpack and wound her way through the tables and the staring faces, most of them too polite to make eye contact. Outside, the cold air cut her lungs, but Jamie refused to let the nausea turn into the spins. She walked in the wrong direction, then remembered the truck. The sky was dark, the street dimly lit with yellow streetlights. She got into the truck as the diner's door slammed behind her. The bastard had followed her. He came to the window and made a little rolling motion with his hand. She lowered the window halfway.
Lose your appetite.
Garcia shook out a cigarette. Seemed greasy. He leaned his elbow on the door, looked around the cab, and asked,
You in school these days?
He flipped a lighter open and blew the smoke to the side.
I'm taking a break. Must be bored. All that time on your hands. You spend a lot of time at Jack Del Mar's store?
Fuck you. She started the engine.
I'm just saying. You're a little young to have to worry about your mother. Your brother. Geez, you're just a kid. Now you're running around for your uncle.
Phoebe appeared at the diner window and looked out at the street. I'm late, she said. The truck bounced when she put it in reverse, but Garcia reached inside the cab and blocked the steering wheel.
Cop asks a question, you give him an answer. You working for Loyal?
Some, she said. There's an event coming up. He laughed.
Yeah, that so-called fundraiser.
She said nothing. He took his elbow off the door and took another drag from the cigarette.
You got that whole elders thing going on, don't you? Fuck the law. Live by your own rules. You might want to give that a second thought. Consider a plan that doesn't include prison time.
The back of her head felt cold. For a moment, it seemed he knew everything she'd done in the last 24 hours. He was so close that if she backed the truck up fast, she could run over his foot. She gripped the wheel and pressed hard on the brake to stop herself from doing it.
I think I made my point, he said, and tossed his cigarette on the ground.
The smoke drifted and curled. Jamie backed the truck up slowly and slipped it in drive. When she passed the diner window, she glanced up, but her mother was gone. Chapter 17. Beyond the tiny, wire, mesh-covered window, the small square of sky was the color of steel. Toby balled up the thin mattress from the built-in concrete shelf and stood on it. Who the fuck puts a window 7 feet off the ground? Daylight was fading, but if he pulled himself high enough, he could almost make out the roof of a building he judged to be about a football field away. The mattress slid out from under him, and when he landed, he smacked his elbow against the metal toilet. He held his arm and rocked back and forth, trying to breathe. Being locked up wasn't as scary as he thought it would be, but all the same, he fucking hated it here. All this steel and concrete. It wasn't natural. Tiny mesh windows bolted closed, big guards pushing him around, everything locked up tight, no Xbox. Somewhere down the long corridor, he could hear a TV blasting a Judge Judy marathon, her voice a parrot screech in his brain. There was nothing to hit but the walls, nothing to kick or break. His legs ached to run, and now his elbow throbbed. The biggest guard on the cell block walked past his door and glanced in. He carried the standard gear on his belt, a can of mace, a nightstick, and plastic restraints.
Sir, sir.
Toby had been in the center 24 hours, and no one had spoken to him since they'd processed his fingerprints and locked him in this room. The guard stopped and faced the cell door.
What?
The sound of a human voice nearly brought him to tears. He stepped closer to the door and read the man's badge. Brewster, huh? It's lonely in here, you know? You're the first one to talk to me.
Must be the first time you said sir.
What?
You want to address someone in here? You call them sir. Understand?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Brewster said and turned away.
Wait!
Toby called. He refused to cry, but that only made his nose run. He swiped at it, hating the pleading tone in his voice and how it made him feel like a girl.
Sir!
Toby yelled.
You got any red, man?
But the man kept walking. Toby took a piece of toilet paper and folded it until it was a small, tight square, stuck it between his cheek and teeth like he'd done when he was little and starving. He sucked at it, slumped on the mattress, and tried to think why his uncle hadn't shown up yet. Or Jamie. She was 19 now. Didn't that mean she could bail him out? An hour later, the man returned.
Sir,
Toby said. Brewster stopped and faced the boy's door again.
What?
Why am I here? I threw one punch. What's the big deal?
You punched the high school coach.
He got a bloody nose is all,
Toby said, moving closer to the door. Brewster stepped in front of the opening, his height blocking the light.
You broke his nose.
Toby feigned a right hook.
I can't help he's a pansy. Can't take a hit.
The man's face was flat, his hands big as paddles, an eagle in military green tattooed on his forearm. Toby smelled the stink of a rotten tooth and backed away.
Hey, nice tattoo, man. Army?
Marine Corps. Retired.
Despite the bad breath, he liked Brewster and wanted to keep him talking.
I'm joining, soon as I graduate.
Huh. Don't know they take punks.
They'll take me. One of them will. Army, Navy. Hey, man, I came in with some red man. Can I get it?
Don't know if you noticed, but this is a jail. Ain't no room service in here.
I want my stuff!
The cell was too small, the light too low. Someone turned up the volume on the Judge Judy marathon.
Your stuff is at the front door. You get it on your way out.
Toby gripped the bars and shook them. Nothing moved, nothing even rattled. Brewster didn't flinch.
Settle down. You're not going anywhere soon.
Where's my uncle? I'm a juvenile!
He pushed away from the door.
You can't keep me here! I got rights! Where's my sister?
He was trembling with rage.
See, now that's where you're wrong. You got nothing, boy. Assault with intent to harm? At your age, that don't get you sent to juvie. This here's downtown jail.
Toby picked up the mattress and threw it. Kicked it again, fell on it, and tried to rip it in half.
You best calm down, boy,
Brewster said.
Don't tell me to calm down,
Toby screamed. From somewhere deep in his belly, a howl made its way through to his lungs and out his mouth. He beat his head with his fists. The door clanged on its hinges and three officers rushed in. Brewster caught Toby's arm and bent it behind his back. Another man guarded the door. The third man picked up the mattress, folded it like a sheet, and walked out the door.
You're going to have to earn that back, Brewster said.
Toby jerked to get loose, but Brewster pulled his arm tighter. Pain shot through his shoulder and Toby dropped to the floor. Brewster let go of his arm and pushed him to the far wall.
Let me know if you can't get that back in its joint,
he said, and slammed the steel door shut. Chapter 18. Jamie pulled the truck to the curb outside Jack's door. He was inside, stooped over a computer and scratching the scruff on his cheek. When they'd first hooked up, she'd expected an older guy to be different from her high school boyfriends. She was wrong about that. Except for the slightly receding hairline and the crinkly lines around his eyes, he was like any other guy. It was almost cute how he was stuck in a time warp when it came to music, playing boxed collections of the Beatles and Pink Floyd. In the beginning, she'd believed his devotion to Bob Dylan meant a thoughtful, reflective